Saban, like Edgar just mentioned, is a guy who works like nobody else, and he doesn't show any signs of burning out at all.
Dude, no, he doesn't have a gray hair on his head, and all I have is gray hair, and the few I do have. The guy's 65 years old.
He must dye his hair. He's
got a good stylist. It doesn't look orange. It doesn't look like Les Miles' dye job.
You're listening to the Orlando Sentinel's College Gridiron 365 podcast. Hosts Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall give their perspective on the hottest topics in college football. Now let's get on with the show.
I'm Matt Marshall, and you're listening to the College Gridiron 365 podcast, day three.
Yeah!
SEC Media Day is finally in the books, and I'm being joined by Orlando Sentinel columnist Mike Bianchi and our Florida Gators writer Edgar Thompson. Guys, day three over in the books, but let's go back a little bit. Let's look at yesterday, Jim McElwain at Florida, his session. Obviously, the big story going into it was
the shark.
No. That's later.
He wasn't happy about that question yesterday, was he?
Well, that was interesting because we knew someone was going to ask that question at some point about the so-called
the viral nude shark photo.
Yes, the viral nude shark photo. So, what was your impression of how he handled it? And
I thought he was gonna. It started out like he was going to handle it by deflecting with humor, and then it took a turn, an awkward turn, where he said, you know, it affected his family. It affected the university. I thought it was a weird turn that answer took.
Yeah, he was bowing up a little bit on it. It's funny. So one of the things I wrote, I mean, we both wrote Gators yesterday, Mike and myself, but was here's this guy coming back from vacation, relaxed, not thinking about football, under the stars up in Montana, and he gets off the plane. He's getting hammered about the shark, about Callaway, starting quarterback, which he didn't really help himself with his continued vagueness on everything, because it opens up to speculation about what's he really mean. And a couple of people are even saying, whether they were right or not, that he even knows who the starting quarterback's going to be, which is premature.
Yeah, it became so controversial that reporters were debating, well, did he indicate who his starting quarterback was going to be, or didn't he indicate? It was, like, weird.
It was a weird day for Florida yesterday. Yeah.
And I think, I mean, as we know, you know, obviously Zaire coming in, he's a guy who there's a lot of buzz surrounding him, and I think going into this game, it's not like Florida has what he kind of called what was like a preseason game, so to speak. It's not like they have some, you know, lesser
opponent.
They got
a real game, as he called it.
They've got a real game, yeah, and they're going to have to play Michigan. But I can't believe a guy like Zaire comes to Florida without the idea that he's probably going to be the starter.
What's that whole thing I said? Is he's not coming to hold a clipboard.
Yeah, but again, and, God, don't the Gators have to, and I wrote about this today, don't they eventually have to, like, recruit and develop a quarterback?
I like that plan best. But perhaps, here's the thing. If Felipe Franks is willing to handle that role, okay?
What, the backup role?
And develop one more year, he could be pretty dang good as a redshirt sophomore potentially, right? Here's all I'm saying, but he might be really unhappy right now about that. If I were him, I'd be unhappy.
I would be unhappy too. Because,
I would.
I mean, let's face it, Zaire is... So he's got 1 year of eligibility left, but he can petition, right? Because he wasn't allowed to redshirt at Notre Dame. So he could actually have 2 years of eligibility, and Franks is going to be sitting around for two years.
Well, he won't be sitting around for two.
Quarterbacks don't do that these
Kyle
days.
Kyle Trask, okay, when he came in, he was a career backup, lightly recruited. He was just happy to be there. He was probably thinking, hey, redshirt junior, if I'm playing, I'd be happy. Franks wasn't that kind of a recruit. He was a big-time recruit. Flip from LSU.
Could have gone to LSU,
and now here he is, and he might have to wait another year after coming out of the spring feeling pretty confident that he was going to be the starter. So it's created an odd dynamic. And
why do the Gators have to keep taking these, for lack of a better term, reject transfers from other schools? I mean, if they're not good enough to start at the schools they were at, why are they good enough to start at Florida?
So I talked to Paul Feinbaum a bit ago. And I always like speaking with him. He's always on point, succinct, unlike myself. And he's like, look, if he can even make a couple of some plays where you win one or even two more games, right? Because think about last year, 9 wins. Was there one of those games you can recall where it's like, oh, that was the quarterback that won it? No.
No.
I mean, the play Appleby made against LSU was huge, but it was 3 field goals in defense. It was defense and kicking, little running, some running game in a few games. It was never the quarterback. So if Zaire can even win you a game or two, suddenly you are improving at that position that has been such a question mark for so long. But I'm not saying he will.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a guy who Notre Dame did not make a real offer to keep.
Well, and let's not forget that there's another, you know, Everett Golson, you know, transferred to graduate transfer, went to, you know, Florida State. He was kind of a bust. I mean, I know Jimbo won't ever, you know, admit that, but I mean, he had some success early on, but he had that one bad game where everything just kind of fell apart, and then he never showed up after that. And I mean, so there's no given that Zaire comes in and leads, you know, the Gators to.
He could get hurt.
There's a reason these guys are transferring.
Yeah. Well, and he got hurt. I mean, look, he lost his job at Notre Dame in game 2 of 2015 against Virginia, breaking his ankle. And that's the thing. I mean, he could get hurt in 3 games, and Franks could be playing anyway.
Well, and the guy in the name that's not getting mentioned is Luke Del Rio, who you kind of, you know, a guy last year who, you know, was there and did kind of, I guess, amicable job, I mean, so to speak.
Well, does anybody even know if he's going to be ready with his shoulder? I mean,
well, he started throwing according to McElwain, but what does that mean? I mean, Luke Del Rio lacked arm strength to really make tough throws against good competition last year, and his confidence has to be way low. And certainly the confidence of Gator Nation. Can you imagine if Del Rio's under center? I mean, fans have already moved on from him.
Okay.
So, and I feel for the guy a little bit. I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, people have just like, I'm sure he's taken a lot of abuse and is totally aware. I think he pays attention pretty well to what people are saying.
Yeah, he seems to be on social media quite a bit.
And to wrap it up, to get back to your point, Mike, a little bit, highly recruit out there, Justin Fields, a guy quarterback that everybody is saying is one of the best, you know, quarterback recruits they've seen in a while. He's supposedly has interest in Florida, as you know.
He's visiting,
and you know, if I'm him and I'm looking around, seeing Del Rio, seeing Zaire, seeing Austin Appleby, grad transfers keep coming in. I think at some point you got to wonder when's it going to be my turn? You know, if I come here, why am I going? I'm not going to sit on a bench, you know.
Or you think they don't have a quarterback, and I'll start immediately, like Eason did at Georgia.
Yeah, but again. If you're a recruit coming out, you're looking at Florida's history of quarterbacks over the last 8 years, and you're saying, what have they done? I mean, what have they done to develop quarterbacks? I mean, and juxtapose that with what Jimbo Fisher has done to develop quarterbacks. I mean, he sends first-round quarterbacks.
Heisman winner.
Yeah. I'm a Heisman winner. He sent, you know, Christian Ponder, E.J. Manuel. You know, these guys don't turn out to be very good in the NFL, but at least they're developed in college and become first-round draft picks.
Yeah.
Moving on from that, another person that was kind of mentioned, Antonio Callaway. You know, we don't seem to know what – I don't think McElwain gave us any firm what's going to be happening.
He kept saying he has 8 Saturdays, basically, to decide.
If they were playing Eastern Michigan instead of Michigan in the first game, Callaway would not be starting the game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody.
It's easy to make a statement in those kinds of games.
Which is why playing one of these kickoff classics, although McElwain says he loves them, I firmly believe one reason Florida always starts off with a Humpty Dumpty opponent is so they can get these suspensions, these off-season suspensions out of the way in the first game. Really?
Yeah, you get them out of the way, you don't have to worry about it. They're not going to have that option this time around. No. They have to play Michigan.
Yeah, look, Callaway has a... He's going to get a minor. He's getting a minor penalty legally on this whole thing, but second time he's been involved in a marijuana incident. You know, he did get the school embroiled in this Title IX thing, even though he was found not responsible.
And he's hanging out. Hanging out with a career criminal,
exactly, 40-year-old guy. But he wasn't suspended last year. Remember? And we were all thinking he probably gets suspended just because of all the stuff, you know, he'd gone through. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm 50-50 on it. I was thinking 100%, but it's Michigan, as you said.
I don't see how you can suspend other guys for being cited for marijuana, like Jordan Scarlett, for instance, and then you not suspend Callaway. That sends a mixed message to your team.
I don't know if any of them failed drug tests, though.
Anything else from McElwain we learned outside of the, you know, his, as he mentioned several times, his wonderful place in Montana.
The LSU homecoming game, which a lot of people felt like the football program was behind it. And McElwain said he never didn't even hear about it. I mean, I guess they don't have cell phone service up in Montana, but I mean, he is out in the boonies, but still, you'd think that he would have heard before he got off the airplane Monday.
Which he probably did.
But he made it clear this is an alumni decision. And as others have pointed out, it really was going to be an October game between two teams.
I do believe
LSU,
that,
Texas A&M, and maybe A&M was already involved in something else. So who knows? I mean, it was going to be LSU no matter what.
It's a good
It's still ironic.
It's a good story to talk about, but
that rivalry between LSU and Florida now has really ramped up, you know, obviously with everything that happened last year and the Hurricane Matthew and the game being rescheduled and everything. And now you see these two fan bases really kind of digging at each other a little bit. I think this game is going to be one of those ones that could get ugly depending on what happens.
That's going to be awesome.
Well, it already got ugly last year thanks to Joe Oliva, LSU AD. But for McElwain to say this is just another game, I mean, you saw him after they beat LSU last year.
Well, he even talked trash.
Yeah, I mean, he said that, you know, they got what they deserved. You know, it should have been worse.
Yeah, he couldn't believe anybody would ever question their willingness to play. Yeah, that's going to be an emotional one. I'm looking forward to that. That's the game I'm most geared up for.
Today we had Nick Saban. Obviously, it was Alabama Day, as we like to call it here. What is it? Over 100 fans downstairs, dressed up in all sorts of, you know.
There was a lady on a stool sitting there. They're like, you know, dove hunting or something. You know, just waiting, waiting for Saban to come flying by so she could stick a pen out and something to sign.
I was in the parking lot while walking into the Winfrey today, and there was a guy getting out of his truck, an Alabama fan. He had on, which I haven't seen a coonskin cap in quite some time. He had a coonskin cap, but it was like an Alabama red and white. He dressed it up in Alabama.
Oh my god!
Well,
colors.
They put a restriction in that lobby today. I mean, obviously, because it'd be like Woodstock down there. In fact, some Alabama fan was saying, "Look, it'd be bigger than Woodstock." I said, "Look, he isn't Jimi Hendrix, but he's close."
Saban spoke today. Obviously, he was the guy that everyone wanted to hear from.
Dangling a little hope for his SEC brethren. Hey, we're young this year.
There's parity in the league. Yeah. He said, named Skarbinski, the columnist from the area, Kevin Skarbinski, tweets, 17 straight wins, 24 of 25 in the SEC, all by an average of 20 points.
Yeah.
Parity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mike, you're writing about, I know that's your column in the paper tomorrow is or online is going to be about that idea of, like, is it good for the league to have Alabama and then everyone else? Or is
the
it
13
you know?
Dwarfs?
I don't think so. I don't think it's good. I mean, it's always good to have, you know, a couple of programs to shoot for, but no, Florida wins the SEC East two straight years, right? Mm-hmm. And what does that really mean? It means you earn the right to go get your butt kicked by Alabama. I mean, it's not even close. What was the score last year? 56-14?
17, maybe.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
It was 33-17. The Gators had the ball on the goal line and were stuffed like three straight times. At that point, I mean, you knew Alabama was going to win, but there was at least potential for a little drama.
Yeah.
And they just stuffed those guys like nothing and scored three straight drives and gained like 300 yards, you know, 280 yards on three drives and boom, it's over.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not getting closer. No. I mean, last year, Alabama, you know, they rolled through the league. I think the average score was like 42-14 in SEC games.
LSU gave them a game, surprisingly.
10-0.
That was a pretty good game, but like Auburn was supposed to be a game, it wasn't. And they just blew the doors off everyone else. But
yeah, the last team to beat them was Ole Miss, and obviously they were cheating to do that. So.
And here's the thing. Yeah, well, good point. Here's the thing, too, he said today. First time since 13, he's returning his starting quarterback. Mm-hmm. And so it's like since those seasons, he's had a new starting quarterback, 14, 15, 16. They were 40-4 those three seasons. I mean, Florida can't find a continuity at quarterback, and you see the results.
Yeah.
But there, it's like it almost doesn't matter.
Here's two stats for you about Saban, all right?
Mm-hmm.
He's never had a quarterback since he got to Alabama. He's never
drafted.
Had a quarterback injured.
Oh, I thought you said drafted.
He's never had a starting quarterback who was injured. He's been there 11 years. What's that tell you about the offensive line talent that he recruits?
Oh, yeah.
Never had a quarterback injured. Here's the other thing. Bear Bryant was at Alabama for 25 years. 9 seasons during those 25 years, his team was ranked number 1 at some point during the season. 9 times in 25 years, Bear Bryant. Saban's been ranked number one the last 9 years. Mm-hmm. Is that unbelievable?
It is.
Well, I was doing a radio interview earlier, and I was just saying, look, this is the kind of stuff that, I mean, we're all kind of cynical and jaded about things sometimes. We, you know, but it's like, you're in the presence of, like, greatness.
Do you think what everybody really appreciates?
I don't know.
How great this guy is?
It's like Tiger. I mean, people don't, I mean, everyone just, they took it for granted.
Yeah.
Jordan, maybe, yeah. Or whatever. I mean, their list goes on, but when you're around, I mean, it's almost like a privilege. I mean, you're watching this guy. Besides the fact, look, people like to give him a hard time the way he deals with the media or whatever. I think he deals with the media fairly well.
I think he's one of the most interesting coaches.
Insightful,
yeah, yeah.
Thorough.
Yeah.
I mean, someone asked him about skill positions. He's like, you mean receivers? He said, no, cornerback or defensive backs too. He knew like how many he had on both sides of the ball just off the top of his head that worked out in the spring. I was like,
yeah.
He just knows just everything inside and out. And there was a tweet from one of the reporters saying, Calvin Ridley just says the man never stops work and he's at the facility all the time. I mean, he's a driven guy. I mean, he's an impressive guy.
Yeah, one of the stories you're working on about coaching longevity.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Stoops retiring at age 56. Saban, like Edgar just mentioned, is a guy who works like nobody else, and he doesn't show any signs of burning out at all.
Dude, he doesn't have a gray hair on his head. And all I have is gray hair, and the few I do have. The guy's 65 years old.
He must dye his hair. He's
got a good stylist. It doesn't look orange. It doesn't look like Les Miles' dye job.
And let's be honest, too, guys. I mean, when you look at him, and you talked about longevity. You know, he's in his 60s. And the thing,
he's 64.
The thing that impressed me was he said, "I don't plan on going like." And indicating that he was going to continue to go on. It wasn't like he was thinking of retiring anytime soon. So this is a situation where...
We just signed that extension, right? Coach still is like 70, 71.
Yeah, so I mean, to be... How many coaches were in there? I mean, you look at maybe Frank Beamer at Virginia Tech. You know,
Bowden Paterno, but they
Bowden,
were...
Paterno, yeah,
they
again,
were fading by the end, but they pushed 80.
But...
How many more SEC coaches is he going to get fired by the time he?
I guarantee you.
Well,
he'll
Bear Bryant didn't.
He'll get several more.
Yeah. Bear Bryant might have retired at 69, 70 years old. He's dead.
69,
like a year,
I think. Yeah.
Dead like a year later.
Dead like 6 weeks later.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, but I don't think that would happen to Saban necessarily. But the point is, I mean, the guy. I mean, in this day and age, if he's coaching till 70, that wouldn't surprise me at all. And winning.
Other teams today were Missouri, Kentucky, Texas A&M. Was there anything that stood out among those three?
Well, Edgar wrote the... Didn't you say you're writing the annual Kentucky's going to be...
It's trending. And could end the 30-game losing streak to Florida?
30? That's amazing. 30-game losing. That still amazes me.
It's incredible. I was just getting out of high school. But I will say that Stoops is pretty impressive and he speaks well. He's recruited pretty well at Kentucky. They've made a big commitment to facilities. Finally seems to have a quarterback. But going what I'm writing is after two games last year, they lose to Florida 45-7. They're 0-2. It looked like that was the beginning of the end of that guy. And they turned it around, won 7-10, made a bowl game for the first time since 2010. Have a quarterback. 17 starters back. I mean, it's going to be a tough out for Florida. Florida has to go up there and play in Lexington, night game probably.
Remember last year I picked Florida, picked Kentucky to beat Florida, and I put it in the paper, and like, I got so much grief.
Well, I know, but you were at the Swamp 2 years prior to that, yeah. And I unfortunately was at a funeral of my stepfather, and Matt had to cover the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt terribly afterwards because... Triple overtime,
yeah.
Thriller.
It was unbelievable.
And
it was unbelievable.
I mean, you're like throwing up in your computer on deadline trying to like figure out how you're even going to get your story in. And then they went up there a year later, I think, to Lexington, and it was a close game.
That's
it wasn't a beatdown.
I thought last year they were going to give Florida fifth.
I think this year it's going to, you know, I'll be surprised if Florida just goes up there and just stomps
them. Are you picking Kentucky? Go ahead, say it right here on the podcast.
You're picking Kentucky. I would pick Florida just because of history.
You're trying to get it, Mike. I like that. You're trying
to get
that.
But Missouri isn't, I wrote some on Missouri too earlier. And, I mean, Missouri, it seems like a long time ago after it won back-to-back SEC title, East titles. And it's, but that offense should be really exciting. 10 returning starters, a great quarterback, 1,000-yard receiver, rusher. I don't think they're going to be. I mean, they're not going to be an easy out. I think Florida has to go on the road there too. Yeah. And then South Carolina speaks tomorrow with Muschamp. They're getting better. I mean, Florida needs to find a dang quarterback, man. Bottom line, circling back to the beginning, because they could lose some games that no one's expecting them to lose if the Gators don't find one.
Tomorrow we got last day. We wrap things up here. It's Auburn, South Carolina, as you mentioned, with Will Muschamp. An interesting one, Ole Miss with Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, because Hugh
this
Freeze.
Could get ugly. This could be like Watergate, the hearings, you know, with Watergate with the media. With Hugh Freeze, and then now today comes out that Houston Nutt, former Ole Miss coach, is suing Freeze and the school, I guess, for defamation of character or something like
for
that.
Trying to throw Nutt under the bus. For the NCAA stuff.
Do we think that's going to be that'll probably more than likely be the big story tomorrow out of all that is the fact that how they handled that situation.
I'm done with Houston Nutt. You want to know why?
What's that?
Because sometimes you feel like a nut and sometimes you don't.
No, I've seen Freeze in person twice now talk about this stuff. And he did at SEC spring meetings. And there was another setting where he spoke about this. I'm trying to remember. But anyway, bottom line is, I mean, he gets up there and handles it actually pretty well. You'll be surprised. I mean, he can get up there and field these questions. My thing with Hugh Freeze is, how's he still employed?
Yeah.
The guy has been absolutely busted,
and that's going to be an issue because I think when I talked to Ole Miss AD Ross Bjork, he was in Orlando a month ago, and he wouldn't talk about specifics for the NCAA because he couldn't but he told me their case comes up in August. They'll go in front of the Committee on Infractions. They've already taken the 1 year postseason bowl ban. I think it's going to be worse. I think when the NCAA gets done with all this, I think Hugh Freeze is going to be suspended. I think at some point he's going to be lack of institutional control. I think he's going to miss time. We're seeing it with Pitino. Listen, if Rick Pitino can have, hookers come in and take care, do the basketball players, I can't imagine this situation with what's going on with Hugh Freeze that he doesn't face some sort of suspension.
No, I mean, and the fact is, Edgar, you remember when Florida was searching for a coach when they hired McElwain? If Hugh Freeze hadn't been rumored to be cheating back then, and he would be the Gator coach, right?
I mean, allegedly there was a contract, very allegedly, and allegedly he was looking for houses in Gainesville.
Wow. That would imagine we'd be sitting here talking about...
I think he would be the coach if he didn't have that NCAA.
Well, Ross Bjork, I asked him in SEC spring meetings 2 years ago, I believe it was, or 15. Yeah, and I was asking him, hey, how close did that happen? And he strongly hinted that there was something going. I mean, he locked him up. You remember he gave him a nice extension?
Yeah.
I mean, and that school has stood behind Hugh Freeze. I mean, the school president and Bjork, who I've always found to be extremely approachable, stand-up guy. I mean, he has tied himself to this guy, and it could be a thrill burner for him, too.
Well, okay, guys. Thanks. I appreciate the time. Again, for more, subscribe, download, listen to more College Gridiron 365 podcast. We've got a couple up from this week. I spoke with Commissioner Greg Sankey the other day. Spoke with College Football Playoff CEO Bill Hancock as well. And we'll continue to have some more. Go to OrlandoSentinel.com for all the great stories you listened to and heard about today. And we'll see you later on down the road.
The College Gridiron 365 podcast is produced by the Orlando Sentinel and hosted by Brant Parsons and Matt Mershell. Come back often and be sure to add the College Gridiron 365 podcast to your RSS and iTunes feeds. Follow everything college football at OrlandoSentinel.com.